Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, in this episode of Scrappy ABM, you're actually going to hear where I was interviewed on somebody else's show. We just love the content so much. We wanted you to hear it and make sure that you got it. So I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
I'm your host, Mike Montague with Avenue 9. My guest this week is Mason Cosby, founder of Scrappy ABM. Scrappiness is his game, and we've been friends here for a while, Mason, but and we both made the websites easy. If anybody cares, it's avenue9.com and scrappyabm.com. But you have been in the ABM game for a while here, and I'm interested to know how it has changed with AI. Are there AIBMs plays? Are there positions that you're finding that you're outsourcing, or is there like a different expectation level from your clients and the people that you're trying to reach? How has AI affected ABM?
Yeah, I mean, first, thank you for having me on. Second, When I think about ABM, I actually think about it in a few key categories of what actually make up a specific program. So it's first data, then it's distribution, then destination, then direction, which is tracking. So I actually think that there have been really solid opportunities through AI to impact each one of those. And then some other use cases for AI that have been terrible in each one of those categories. So sourcing data and actually having a great look at your ideal client profile has not really ever been easier. So simply put, like when I look at just truly basics of like ChatGPT, like most basic accessible like AI tool. I mean, I've been using it with some of our clients to help them identify their client lifetime value and then understand the firmographics, which means like revenue, headcount, industry, like the characteristics that are hard characteristics of that company that then based on like profitability reports showcase, these are the consistent trends across all of these kinds of companies that are your most profitable companies. And like that kind of information is wildly helpful for actually identifying the best customer. So you've got that. And then also just like the ability to look at all of your deals and then look at who's been involved and actually then have a more objective view at who actually drives the deal forward. Like we did this and we uploaded every transcript using, we use Fathom, which is another AI tool. So we uploaded every transcript to see who has been seriously involved in our sales conversations and what are their constant objections. So we can one, make sure we're talking the right people in our sales conversations. And then two, actually it will inevitably affect destination of like, well, what kind of content should we create? So from a data perspective, I love it. Distribution, I'm gonna be honest, love hate relationship here.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like the AI SDR, I got some very clearly outbounded things earlier today. In it, like, so for context, I live in Indianapolis, but specifically in a suburb called Whitestown. It is about a 4-block city. There's nobody that lives here. And I keep getting messages about other agency owners in Whitestown. And it's like, like, there's there might be.
I'm the only one. I've met the entire Chamber of Commerce and everybody in the town. I'm the only one.
Yeah. I say that very sincerely. Like, there's a high likelihood that I actually am the only person in Whitestown that owns an agency because it's 4 blocks of a city. Like it's so things like that where it's just totally off the mark. But on the other side, when you have really great targeting that then makes it easier to activate based on specific triggers we're seeing with engagement within an account for like ad programming. So using AI to trigger distribution, great opportunity.
Right.
And the last two things I'll just call it really quickly would just be from a destination perspective, the ability to generate content also has never been easier. I will say sometimes AI content can be super hit and miss. I think that AI content is as good as its trainer. So if you think about training AI the same way that you would train up a new team member and nailing the messaging and the tone and the voice, it can actually create really great content. It just takes a lot of like upfront work. It's not out of the box, batteries installed. It is some training and some coaching with a tool, which is a little bit different than what we've normally thought about with tools. Like, you don't normally teach and train and coach tools, but like that is what you do with AI. And then lastly, just from a direction perspective, which is tracking. Again, I think that AI has been able to make data analytics and like analysis exponentially easier than it has been previously. So like non-technical people like me can use tools that function by just uploading an absurd amount of data and saying, can you help me understand the trends we're seeing within our data? And again, you need accurate prompting, but I, not knowing how to find it, can prompt appropriately and actually get information like, this is the journey that this account went through, and here are all their engagement touch points that we were able to track, and then to assume touch points based on transcripts or call scripts or messages or anything along those lines we're able to source and upload. So I think that it's been helpful in those ways. So overall, great improvement, huge opportunity, but also used wisely. And the final thing I'll say, and then move on to the next question, is just like, in each one of those examples, there is still a human involved. So I don't think that this is a set it and forget it type situation. I think this is a sparring partner that helps make things better and faster.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it. I have interviewed you before on a different podcast about your framework. And I love the way you set that up and thinking about ABM, but also just for AI, that there are certain things like data, and especially large amounts of data, that humans are not great at analyzing, coming up with the right relevance. They kind of look for their own reasons and their own justifications in data, and they're too biased, and it's too much information for somebody to hold. Makes a ton of sense to apply AI there. And then, like you said, with distribution, I think AI for me as a content marketer creates a lot more distribution possibilities, because now I don't have to spend a crap ton of money or hire 8 people to have videographers and copywriters and social media people and all these different team members, where I can focus on capturing my core message, like you mentioned, training up the AI, and then allowing different distribution channels that weren't available to me, especially in a smaller, medium-sized business before, is great. The other thing you mentioned is turning AI internally. I think a lot of people miss that opportunity. And especially when you're doing ABM or targeting a large account, is we need to look at like what's going on here, not just how do I amplify my messages out, but how do I use that AI power internally to better focus the messages that we are giving, is a big missed opportunity for people, for sure. And obviously it's a human first AI marketing podcast, so I think it's human first and human last on all of these to review, and not just, like you said, just let it go willy-nilly and spam the crap out of people with automated messages that were generated. And I love training GPTs. That's one of my favorite things to do for my clients, is interview their founder, their top salesperson, their best clients, and start creating that contextual profile to make the GPTs better for whatever you want to do, and training and coaching and teaching the humans on the team how to use it and prompt it and go back and forth to get what you really want out of it. So that's fun.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Let's turn to ABM in general, because I also have some philosophies here that as we go forward and AI kind of begins to, we have more and more marketers spamming the crap out of everyone and create more and more noise, I think it's going to be harder for prospects to hear the signal through the noise, but also for us to cut through with our messaging. And so for me, that means winding back a lot of bad marketing practices people have gotten into and focusing in on a few really valuable relationships that work. And I think account-based marketing is one of those things, as well as like client relationships and referrals and stuff like that. But instead of trying to reach everyone in the world that's available in our target market, why don't we pick 10 people we really want to build a relationship with that we have a shot at winning and would be ideal clients if we got them, and focus there. Seems to be like a much better investment for my marketing dollars and time, but also for the use of leveraging AI rather than just trying to add more noise out there. Would you agree? How's ABM changing here as far as a strategy as things get noisy?
There was a very helpful framing that I heard probably a year ago as AI was becoming more and more a thing that people were like, oh, like, I don't think this is fad. Like, I think it's here to stay. Because there's a lot of noisy fad type things that came out all around the same time. And like AI clearly stuck, which is great. The advice was double down on either in-person or AI. If you are focused on one of those two areas, and I think you should admittedly do a little bit of both, but if you focus on AI, you'll have exponentially greater scale, capability, efficiencies, but it's all largely going to be digitally focused. So that's fine. That's a great approach. The other approach is it's really hard to replace AI with a handshake. Like, I don't think we're gonna ever get away from the value of just sitting down, having an in-person conversation, and I don't know, just like enjoying time that is not as, I have a love-hate relationship with remote things. I want to be super clear, I run a remote agency, but like all of our meetings are very transactional, generally speaking, because there's a 30-minute time block. And then like you and I, right after this, we'll have another meeting and another meeting and another meeting. Yeah. And I've been in meetings since 7:30 a.m. And I will be in meetings until 5. Like that is just the day. So every meeting has to fit within my constructed time slots, which creates less opportunity for relationship depth. So yeah. As I think about it, that's the value of in-person. So ABM in general, we have a few clients that are kind of on the AI craze a little bit. And they're like, how do we do highly personalized, scalable, like one-to-one ABM utilizing AI and making sure we've got individual content journeys and assets for every prospect at every one of our target accounts. And like, that is neat, a little crazy, if I'm being honest, but kind of cool. The same vein is we've got other clients that are just saying, I think we should just go to more events and like just see more people in person. So about 50% of our clients, their main go-to-market strategy within the context of ABM is events. So all of their digital programs are to generate awareness, and they use events as a conversion point to actually then book meetings and make sales. So when I think about ABM in general and kind of what's happening today, the language of digital fatigue has been used probably too much, but I think it only is increasing because of the prevalence of AI and its ability to create greater scale, and sometimes people using that poorly versus intentionally. But those that are using AI intentionally as a way of not just mass marketing, but of doing more deeply intent-based research to personalize, I think win with AI. And then that plus in person is kind of the winning formula that we've been seeing a lot right now.
Yeah, I heard a similar line recently, and I've adopted it, is that AI is fast and trust is slow. So if you want something fast and you want to reach a lot of people, or you need to capitalize on a market or an opportunity that's quick, AI can probably help you do that better than a human. But if you need trust and you need, you know, a high value relationship or a high ticket item or something that is a little bit more complicated, that's probably still human first. But I love what you said. The thing I've been encouraging my clients to do is that personalization, that we've now officially with AI crossed the level of persona to person. We don't need to create persona level campaigns anymore, because we can customize every campaign with a very small variable cost to the actual person we're talking to. So rather than say, hey, how do I make a campaign targeting CMOs across the country? Why don't I look at this CMO, see what they're up to, what events they're going to, what blogs they read, what's important to them, where their company is in the market, and create an ABM play directly to this one person? That seems to me to be the coolest way to make AI, not the other way around.
And so for context, like I use a tool called Superhuman to help manage my inbox, and they've got AI and it like does auto drafting based on the email thread. And like, that's been a very helpful way to utilize AI on a one-to-one basis, because it is taking into context all communication with that person and that specific email thread. Fantastic. It does not auto send. I think that's the big thing that I want to call out is, to your point, you can absolutely create using AI one-to-one based to the person. Don't just let it auto send. Like, there still needs to be a human being that reviews these things. So I still think of it because I'm always intentional to make sure that people don't hear an episode like this and say like, oh, all these things are capable. We should go like totally overhaul our entire strategy because of what's possible. You should do the strategy that works best. Find the gaps in which it's hard or super manual or difficult to measure. And then you go find tools to fix those specific key points. So if you right now don't have problems, tools just solve problems. So like, don't go make problems. If you have problems, like we aren't getting as great of a response or open rate because most of our stuff is really canned and generic. Okay, that's a viable problem. How do you improve that? We need better personalization, but we also need efficiency. Great, AI can help you accomplish that, but there's still a human involved that reviews and edits and like make sure you don't send dumb things like what I got, which literally had, it was a 3-sentence email. Every sentence had something inaccurate, like grossly inaccurate, like ROI metrics for clients. Yeah. And like it can say some things. So it's just, you need a human involved to validate and verify.
Yeah, I have seen that a lot too. But I will say from my perspective, not making excuses, because I think what those automation companies say is salespeople have been doing that to me for decades. You know, I do a lot of different things. So it's really funny when I was at Sandler and somebody would send me a message about like, hey, your podcast promotion is terrible or something like that. And you're like, you know, I'm also in charge of the podcast promotion. Delete this. And he was like, and clearly you didn't look at it because also we're already doing what you suggested with the short clips or whatever and stuff. And you're like, no, everything you wrote here is inaccurate. So maybe check it. So that goes for humans and AI. Love that. Now you did mention the strategy part. And I know that when we talked before, I've been really impressed about the way you think about ABM. So if we take AI out of it, maybe for a minute, as much as we can in 2025, and just talk about the strategies. I like the way you think about ABM plays and what ABM is for. So just by chance, if somebody made it this far and they're still going, what the heck is ABM and why would I be doing it? You want to roll up just how you think about this as a growth strategy for a company?
Absolutely. So in short, ABM is a B2B revenue strategy that aligns the marketing, sales, and customer success team around a set of shared target accounts that should reflect our best customers. So Mike, since the last time we spoke on a podcast, I actually added that at the end of like that reflect our best customers, specifically because we had many marketing and sales teams that were aligned of like, oh yeah, we should go after these accounts. And I was like, we sell to the SMB. We are not going to get Apple. Like it's just... We can all be aligned that we would like that. I would like to close Apple. I'm probably not going to. So when we think about the idea of ABM, the goal here is to get more of our most profitable customers because that is the best. Now, some people, I want to be super clear, that is a vast generalization. You may run a lifestyle business and say, I want to work more with people that I enjoy more so than those that are profitable. And I want to be super clear. I have also done that. I have some clients that I love working with that are not that profitable, but I like them. And like, that's okay. So like, you get to make your own choices. It's right. It's your own business. But for most people, profitability is a great measure for best. So that's how we define it. And then it's pretty simple from there. Every account that you want to work with, an account is just another word for company. So every company that you want to work with needs to know that you exist. They need to have a problem. They need to know viable solutions. They need to understand your solution uniquely. They need to book a meeting with sales. They need to be qualified and they need to actually have a real opportunity to buy right now. So it's those 7 stages. So we just simply break ABM down into what are the things that we're doing to move an account through those different 7 stages of awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, marketing qualified account, re-engagement, sales qualified opportunity. And if you can do that through specific playbooks, and those playbooks go back to that 4D framework I referenced earlier, your repeatable processes you can run over and over and over again to progress your accounts through your program. Now, I want to be super clear. Some of you are thinking the buyer's journey is not linear. And I fully agree. Like it's not. But also, we should have content that speaks to our buyers every stage of their journey. So they may start at awareness. They may go look at a buyer's guide that's super high intent. And then they may go back to like awareness level content. And like, that's fine. But I sure want to make sure that I have information and content that can guide them, even though I know that they will bounce all over the place. And I want to make sure that based on what I am able to see and track in my understanding of where they are in their journey, that the content I'm sending matches where they are in their current journey. So that's a high level overview and how we think about account-based marketing.
Yeah, all of that is awesome and great. And I heard a couple of things in there that I wanted to highlight or ask you more about. One is there is a playbook of things. So this isn't necessarily, like you said, a linear funnel or a set of clearly defined strategies that are like, oh, we do pay-per-click ads that send to a landing page that convert to a webinar that, you know, the webinar sells the trial and the trial goes in. Like that's a nice marketing funnel, but that's not really an ABM play. An ABM play could be a lot of different things to reach that target account. And you might, yep, depending on their business, offer a lot of different strategies. It could be a podcast interviewing strategy where we're going to go interview the CEOs of all of our target companies and create a podcast out of this. And the podcast is the account strategy that we get to in front of these decision makers, right? It could also be an email campaign or some sort of waterfall across the organization. Or you mentioned events and stuff of showing up in person where these accounts are, yeah, to meet them. And so I think that's really cool. And not a lot of people think about marketing in that way. I think they want this process and step. And some people, I know you're a big fan of measurement too, but people over measure these things that are really obvious metrics. Like, oh, if I just get 1,000 impressions on this post, then I'll get, you know, 100 impressions of my landing page. And if the bounce rate's this, then that. But really thinking strategically about how, if you wanted to reach a real human or group of humans at this account, how would we do it? And so that was my next question for you is, I think also people mistake account-based marketing sometimes as the list of accounts, but the part you jumped over, and I hear a lot of people jump over, is that the account part actually means we're targeting everyone at this company, not just like the company itself or just a decision maker. And those require different strategies. So could you talk a little bit about maybe how marketing to a set of decision makers in a complex buying journey, like you mentioned, is different than an individual or a retail consumer?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you look at the average B2B decision, which B2B on average costs at least $50,000. Like that's the average, like minimum. Or let me reframe that. That didn't make sense. It's the low end. It's like you should, it's not the average minimum. That made no sense. But it's typically in the range of like $50,000 to $100,000 is what you're looking at for any kind of a B2B purchase. Now, granted, there are some that cost 10. There are others that cost billions. Like it's just depends on what you're looking at. But in short, these things are expensive. The way that I described it to my B2C friends, like imagine buying a house like every month. And like that is what purchase decisions are in B2B from an expense perspective. So there's a lot of people involved in making the purchase of a home every month. And it's going to be whoever's actually using this tool or product or service. It's going to be their bosses. It's going to be the finance department. Often there's IT and security. There's going to be legal. And I just like rattled that off as like standard purchases. And if like there's technology involved at all, IT is involved. If there's a contract, which there should be, legal is involved. If there's money involved, which hopefully there is in a purchase, finance is involved. And then the actual like 1, 2, 3, 4 departments that are actually using the thing, right, that was purchased. So that's also why this average B2B purchase has anywhere from like 8 to 14 people involved. And as I just rattled off those teams, they all have different priorities and concerns. Like legal's job is to protect the company from being sued. IT's job is to protect data. Finance's job is to make sure that the money we invest has a return. The department wants their life to be easier. Like they want things to go more smoothly and to be better. So like different concerns for every different department. So we need to make sure that we have content and information that speaks to each one of those concerns and makes them feel better moving forward, because any of them could be the thing that ends up preventing the deal from moving forward. Yeah. So there's that thought. And then the other thing is these purchases just take time. Because you also have to get all these people in the room to talk about it together. And I don't know when this episode is coming out, but I'm going to out when we're recording. We're recording like middle to end of May. This is the dead season for most B2B organizations because people go on vacation. So like, yeah, they literally can't get everybody in the room to like make the decision because nobody's around. Like, so there are those kinds of cyclical market trends you have to also understand in the context of ABM. So as I think about it, those are some of the core challenges and like why B2B is hard and why I like ABM is you then understand the nuances of that decision committee. So you're not just making content for like the end user that would actually book the initial meeting, but like we create content that's actually for the CFO. And oh, by the way, the reason that ABM works so well is sometimes sales doesn't get access to everybody that's involved in actually making the decision. But fun fact, marketing has access to people through like paid media programs. So like you can get some of people. So when I think about ABM, it is ensuring not just the company, like, yes, we want to speak to the company goals and all of that, but it's also speaking to the individual buyer's needs and values and wants to make sure that they uniquely are bought in as well. So that when the group gets together, they can agree. Because if they don't agree, either stalls the deal to the point in which somebody inevitably just says, fine, I'll give in. And honestly, that rarely happens. Like what often more often happens is when deals get stalled, they just die because the cost of wasted time trying to convince somebody is greater than the cost of moving forward without their buy-in. So like
100%, I think you can picture, right? If you're not doing ABM plays, we all want to get in front of the decision maker, right? But that also limits their bandwidth. So the CEO, yep, president, owner, sure, we'd all like to start with them. And if they say, hey, I'd love to have you take a look at this, the people below them are at least going to listen and take a look at it. I think it's also great if your target buyer is, we'll just make it up, like the CMO or a marketing VP. If that person brings something to the table and it's a marketing solution, everybody else is going to kind of listen to them too. They're saying, this is what I need to do my job. But imagine if kind of all three of them come to the table and say, hey, have you heard about Scrappy ABM? They go, actually, yeah, I was just looking at it. And they go over to finance or something and they go, oh, you know what? I saw that it's getting a great return on investment these days. And all of a sudden they've heard of it too. Now you're talking about a completely different discussion. And so for a long time in marketing, we've talked about socially surrounding people and not just using one channel of like, oh, I connected with them on LinkedIn, but how can we get their text or also retarget messages on Facebook and Twitter and on the website and display ads and everything else. You can kind of do the same thing in account and really have a lot better success and conversion. And at least I think that's really the challenge of every marketer, but also small businesses. At least if they say no, they all had the right information. We had the opportunity to win. Because like you said, with deals, over 50% of B2B deals end in no decision, not to the competition. But also I think even when you're talking about the biggest brands on the planet, like Facebook or Apple have a billion users or something, maybe up to 2 billion, but there's 8 billion people on the planet. That still means more people have not used Facebook than have, even with the largest companies on the planet. So the biggest challenge is irrelevance in a lot of these B2B decisions. So great stuff there today. I have one last fun question for you, which is if you had to guess which sci-fi movie we'll end up in like 15, let's say 30 years from now or within our lifetimes, Mason, because I think we're at least close enough to put a timeline on it. Where do you think this all ends up? Do we end up in Blade Runner, Star Trek, other alternate future Idiocracy? What do you think?
I mean, I have an optimistic and a pessimistic. So like, I think Star Trek would be great. Pessimistic is like truly Terminator, like, or Matrix. Like, yeah. I think this is going to be really bad to out-verbalize. I'm going to anyway. Like, my space is agency space. So I think the mid-market agency space is going to be very compressed. And like, we're going to see a lot of businesses go out of business because they don't adopt probably the next like 3 to 5-ish years. So admittedly, that is mainly where my focus is how we stay up to date and actually end up being an industry leader on that front so that we are not irrelevant 3 to 5 years from now. Past that, I don't know. It's either going to be really great or they're going to turn on us.
That's funny. Very similar to my answer. I think the event horizon is the super intelligence artificial general intelligence, AGI, which means like once that happens, I think all bets are off because it depends on whether its interests are aligned with ours or who gets control of it or what happens from there. Could be infinite good or infinite bad, really, at that point, which is fascinating. And a lot of people are predicting that in the next 7 years, we reach that critical threshold, some as few as like the next 3 years. So it'll be fun to find out. And I like your predictions too. If I had a wish, I would go with Star Trek Next Generation or something like that. If I had a most likely guess, it would probably be somewhere between Idiocracy and Minority Report, where all the marketing is just like scanning our faces and constantly bleeping in front of us and retinal scans and as showing up on our bathroom wall while we're running out of toothpaste or whatever. It feels like that could definitely be the way we go marketing wise.
Yeah, I'm like cautiously optimistic. I like look forward to how it'll make us all more efficient, but also we'll see. It'll be great.
All right. Well, then I appreciate your time and we got to end on something a little bit more happy. So tell us about what's going on at Scrappy ABM, how you can help us or we can help you.
Yeah, I feel like some of the things we talked to today, specifically the account progression model and the 4D framework, that's what we do for clients is we build those things, teach you how to own them and then move them back in-house. So our goal is to not be your forever agency, but to help you get set up with ABM running successfully for the very first time. So if you want help with that, go to scrappyabm.com. There's a green button at the top right-hand corner that says book a call. And you can talk to our sales team. And then if you want to find out more about like ABM stuff in general, I'm on LinkedIn. So Mason Cosby, I post almost every day about something ABM related. Or you can go find Scrappy ABM, the podcast, which we've got like 170 episodes on the topic. So that's kind of us in a nutshell.
Love it. And as far as Avenue 9 goes, we help you build your AI marketing engine in a human first way so you can use the automation, but also the authenticity of your business. So if I can interview, you know, as I mentioned, your founder, your top salesperson, create that contextual profile for AI that lets you tell better stories in more ways and new places, or you want to start a podcast, write a book, build a community, that kind of stuff. That's how I help people in a lot of different ways. You can check out avenue9.com. Until next time, keep going, have fun with it, and good luck, everybody. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.